ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजनाचलाखाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदामयं ददाति स्वापदन्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साकृचाथाहं सहकना रघुनाथान्वितं धां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहकना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचना गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पथिथानां भावनिभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण टुडे इज द सेलिब्रेशन ऑफ लॉर्ड राम victory over Ravana. Before discussing this subject matter, I would like to say a few words on the very auspicious occasion of the disappearance day of His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami Maharaj. Actually, this is not only a class in itself, it is a whole day of divine memories. But I only have time to speak a few minutes on the subject. Srila Prabhupada, when he left Vrindavan, came to the West. He was searching for those spirit souls who were willing to open their hearts and receive the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And anyone who would do so, and especially those who would assist him in his mission, Srila Prabhupada just showered such immense gratitude and blessings upon them. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would give all credit to his disciples. He would say, "I am an old man, how much can I do? But all of you are helping me so nicely." Here in London, on his Vyas Puja, one year, the day after the installation of Radha Gokulananda, although it was the most auspicious day of the year to glorify him, in his lecture, he simply glorified his disciples, gave all credit to his disciples for what he had accomplished. That is the natural humility of a true Vaishnava. Of course, we know that it was Srila Prabhupada's empowerment that enabled anyone to do anything in his loving service. And it was in California, Los Angeles, New Dwarka, that one friend of His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, Taudam Singh, something, is that was his name? His name before? Okay. He was working on his PhD in science in Irvine, California. And he was brought to meet Srila Prabhupada. And how joyful Srila Prabhupada was. Here was someone from Manipur. I mean, Prabhupada, what he was dealing with in the Western world. And here was someone from Manipur who was born and raised a Vaishnav. A person who was not coming from the lands of Malechas and Yavanas like everyone else Prabhupada was dealing with, but a person who came from a kingdom that long ago was transformed into a Vaishnav state by the followers of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. And amongst Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Manipur has always had a very, very high place in their esteem because of their historical devotional background. Not only was he coming from such a pious and devotional background, but he was working on his PhD in science in an American university. He knew the language. Prabhupada really just immediately embraced him in his heart. And of course, Prabhupada was very endeared by Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj's very humble, very sincere, very highly cultured Vaishnav qualities. I remember in 1972, when Srila Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan for the Bhagavad Dharma discourses. It was, at that time, perhaps the biggest festival in America up to that date. Prabhupada was coming to speak 7 days on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the conclusion, he was going to celebrate Janmashtami and his own Vyas Puja on top of a mountain. And Prabhupada came from Los Angeles, and he brought with him Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Even though he was in school and everything, Prabhupada said, "You come with me." Prabhupada paid the way and everything. And he sat with him by the on the flight. Srila Prabhupada saw the qualities within him and saw the potential within him of what he could do. From that point on, their relationship is in immortal history within our ISKCON and within Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Srila Prabhupada took note of how misdirected motivations were misinterpreting reality in the name of science. And even in the name of academics, education, and knowledge, were stealing people's faith in God away, either directly or indirectly. People were becoming atheistic, or even people who professed religion, it was becoming very empty and shallow because they didn't really have faith in their own scriptures. They didn't really have faith in God. Why? Because these scientists, who are put on the highest pedestal of being learned and knowing the truth, they were speaking speculative theories in the name of knowledge that made God irrelevant in our lives. Srila Prabhupada was a spiritual warrior. In order to gain victory for Lord Ram, it was very important to slay illusion, ignorance, misconception. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. Where there is light, darkness is dispelled. Where there is Krishna, ignorance or Maya vanishes. On this day of Dasera, the day of Ram's victory over Ravana, we will hear how it was a long battle, and it was very, very heart-rending, tragic events that led to this battle. And Ravana's forces were formidable. Ram and his soldiers, they fought. Srila Prabhupada once said that just like in order to bring Sita back to Ram, Ram had to fight Ravana a major battle, one of the greatest wars of all time. And the only people he had to help him was an army of monkeys. And they didn't even have weapons. They just threw stones and bit with their teeth and scratched with their nails. Some of them had clubs. And they were battling against an army that had the most sophisticated, powerful weapons, highly trained military. Srila Prabhupada said, similarly, in my battle against Maya, Krishna has only given me a bunch of monkeys like you. But he had a couple people, Poor Village in Manipur. He used to plow the fields with oxen. Not much hope of a future in his economic situation, but he was so determined. He was so determined to do something great that through his efforts, through his charm, he just won people's hearts. He was so brilliant, he was so devotional that he was given scholarships in Calcutta and then scholarships in America. He gained a PhD with honors. And he knew Prabhupada, he knew Prabhupada's language, he knew Prabhupada's heart. And Prabhupada saw in him someone who could go right to the heart of Ravana in the form of scientific atheistic speculation. Those famous morning walks, some of the most celebrated and enlightening of all of Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada would walk either at Juhu Beach or at Venice Beach or in some park. And oftentimes the first thing he would ask his GBCs, his sannyasis, his secretary is, where is Swarup Damodar? Bring him here. He was humble. There were all these very, very senior devotees standing next to Prabhupada. He would just be in the back, walking. Prabhupada would say, where is Swarup Damodar? Bring him here. He'd say, where is my Swarup Damodar? And then he would stand next to Prabhupada and all the other leaders would walk behind. He was a brahmachari. And Prabhupada would, what do they say about this? What do they say about that? And he would push Swarup Damodar Maharaj to challenge Prabhupada, to ask questions. What an amazing relationship. I can't think of too many other people that Prabhupada would blissfully impel to challenge him. Yes? But Prabhupada understood that his answers were for the welfare of the whole world. And when Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj would pose the allegations, the challenges, the misconceptions of scientific theories, it was for the purpose of enlightening the whole world. And Srila Prabhupada told him. He told the leaders of ISKCON, I believe the BBT, that they should print a book with the discussions between him and Swarup Damodar Maharaj. And Prabhupada named it Life Comes from Life. And then Srila Prabhupada gave him a lifetime instruction to establish the Bhaktivedanta Institute, which is very unique. That they can wear suits and ties, look like real bona fide scientists from the perspective of scientists, and go into these academic circles, scientific circles, and prove Krishna consciousness in their language. Now, in order to understand Srila Prabhupada, this is a very important part of Prabhupada's life. Srila Prabhupada was not a stereotyped person. Prabhupada, out of compassion, he was willing to accept what worked. He would not accept compromising our Siddhanta, but as far as the presentation of that uncompromised Siddhanta, and how it's presented, and on what levels, and from what perceptions that uncompromised Siddhanta is presented, Srila Prabhupada was extremely creative and empowered his disciples, like Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, to be extremely creative, to make our philosophy relevant and understandable to our audience. The Bhaktivedanta Institute was not that everyone should be relevant to us. Prabhupada was showing if we want to effectively preach, we have to become relevant to the people we're preaching to. We have to package our preaching in such a way that it will penetrate their hearts and will convince their minds. And Prabhupada was so enthusiastic about the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Not only through his morning walks and his room conversations, there was just so much volume of discussion on the subject. But Prabhupada told leaders of ISKCON that as far as Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he said, whatever he needs, you give him. Whatever he needs, you give him. Prabhupada considered this project so important. On the year that he left us, there was a memorial service in Los Angeles. At the time, I happened to be living in Carpinteria, California, with His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj. So I drove down to Los Angeles especially for that memorial service. It was really striking because there were several Srila Prabhupada disciples, very senior people, including Amarendra, the most prominent lawyer of our society, Dravida, senior most brahmachari, editor of Prabhupada's books, compiler of the Vyas Puja every year, and the emperor of chanting slokas. And several others were there. The amazing thing, each one of them, when they got up to speak, and these were all very, very senior, prominent devotees, they all told the same story, how Srila Prabhupada had ordered them to give up all their other services to assist Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj with his BI. Amarendra Prabhu was the temple president of Gainesville, California. Gainesville, Florida. And it was one of the most successful temples of our society. Prabhupada told him, even if you have to leave your temple presidency, abandon all varieties of religion, practically, he told him. And I want you to facilitate and help and promote Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Dravida was he was one of the very senior editors for Back to Godhead, perhaps BBT. I don't know exactly the details, but he had a very prominent role to play in Prabhupada's book publications. Prabhupada told him, give your time, whatever it takes, to assist and promote the mission of Bhakti Swarup Dhammaramara. And there were two other devotees there, Prabhupada disciples, who said the same thing. Go to Atlanta and help Bhakti Swarup Dhammaramara. One was in San Francisco. He had a prominent role as a temple leader. It was interesting because it just so happened that all the Prabhupada disciples that happened to be there in Los Angeles at that time were told, most of them, to abandon everything and help Bhakti Swarup Dhammaramara. So how dear he was to Srila Prabhupada. How much Srila Prabhupada trusted him. His integrity, his love and devotion, his commitment, and his abilities. But that's only a part. And he gave his life to the last breath, never failing to pursue Prabhupada's instruction in that way. In Prabhupada's presence, you know, when Prabhupada was on his deathbed practically, or his launching pad, whatever we want to call it, to Goloka, when he was in his last months, Bhakti Swarup Dhammaramara Maharaj was organizing these conferences with prominent scientists, Nobel Prize winners from all parts of the world. And Prabhupada was so proud to get reports. He was so eager for those reports. Just as he was so eager for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's reports on book distribution, he was so eager for Bhakti Swarup Dhammaramara Maharaj's reports of how he was infiltrating the scientific world with bhakti. And he had those conferences. After Srila Prabhupada's disappearance from this world, he remained totally committed to that service. And he brought the kinds of people and published scientific journals and books with some of the most powerful, influential Nobel laureates and scientists supporting the basic principles of bhakti by his influence. And he became one of the world's leaders of interfaith dialogue. Amongst the highest prominence of interfaith leaders. It's not easy to attain that type of position. But he did it. And he was loved and respected as a Vaishnava, as a representative of Krishna and Prabhupada. And he really did so much to introduce Vaishnava tradition and culture into our society. Srila Prabhupada sometimes said, we will spread Krishna consciousness through cultural conquest. Maharaj took that very much to heart and created cultural programs, Manipur dance, martial arts, sword fighting, music, drama. And was brought in. It was so effective, and it was based on bhakti, and he was right there in the middle of it. And he traveled around with that troupe of Mayapur performers all over the world. They were invited to events by national governments that we've never been given entrance to before. At temples to help raise funds for projects, to raise the image of our society, not just as a sectarian or religion, but people through his performances all over the world, they could see that the Krishna consciousness is, it's an ancient culture with deep traditions and history. And they would all hear the holy names and hear some really sweet philosophy of what bhakti is and see it in action. I remember one time I was at one place where the Manipur troupe was, Bhakti Swarup Damodara Maharaj. He was just like a father and a loving servant to all those people he was traveling with. He took such care of them. Devotees made a big feast for them. And he said, I remember he came to the kitchen and said, all they really want, all they really need to be satisfied is large quantities of rice. You could make anything else, everything else you want, that's all right. But they won't be satisfied unless they have large quantities of rice. And devotees made big feasts, and you know, they would just take a little piece of this, a piece of that. But their plate, it was really large quantities of rice. They just loved rice. So simple. They were working so hard, traveling all over the world, performing, just out of love for him. And practically all they were getting out of it was rice. Of course, they were getting great blessings. And his kirtans. Actually, one melody that I sing often, it actually came from him, Bhakti Swarup. Gaurvani Prabhu, one wonderful, wonderful saintly Gurukul devotee. He learned it from Bhakti Swarup Damodara Maharaj, and I learned from him. One of the greatest pleasures in life is to not be original or creative, but just to be a humble student of others and give them the credit. It's a very liberating experience when you do that. So, yes. How many of you have witnessed Bhakti Swarup Damodara Maharaj leading kirtan? It was like a dramatic performance manifesting from Navadvip Dham 500 years ago at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His gestures, his feeling, his voice. So deep with devotion and so deep with tradition. And his own personal qualities, very humble, very down to earth, very forgiving. A person of such stature, PhD, sannyasi, guru, always just wanted to be everyone's friend and well-wisher. It's a beautiful experience. And when he created that unbelievable temple in Manipur, the highest politicians, government officers, practically everyone were coming to touch his feet. I think it's historically within ISKCON, it's never been before. Where a man actually was so much revered by the entire country and government that he was preaching in as a saint. So on this very, very holy day, let us bow our heads in gratitude to His Holiness Srila Bhakti Swarup Dhammarar Swami Maharaj. I think that somehow or other he was in Calcutta and Prabhupada, just like he would in the morning walks. He said, "Where is Swarup Dhammarar? Bring him here." And Krishna brought him to Prabhupada on this day. Should I begin the class now? Where to begin? Ram was born on Ram Naomi. And Sita was born on Sita Jayanti. And Hanuman on Hanuman Jayanti. So we know the story how Ram was exiled to the forest for 14 years by Kaikeyi, who was influenced by Mantara, her maidservant, completely distorted her mind. Kaikeyi loved Ram the same way Kausalya loved Ram as her own son. But somehow or other, due to association with an evil and envious person, she turned against Ram and became heartless. In the same way, even great devotees, in bad association, we could lose all of our devotion. Mantras just snatched the bhakti away from Kaikeyi. Association is very important. If we associate with people who are criticizing, who are envious, and an envious person never says, "I'm envious." They always say, "I don't want to say this, but I have to because it's the truth." That's what every envious person will say. And that's what Mantara said. "I don't want to hurt you, Kaikeyi, but I have to tell you the facts for your own protection." Somebody's envious of the Vaishnavas, that's what they'll say. "For your own protection, for your own sanctity of consciousness, so you're not misled, I have to tell you the truth. Even though I actually love this person, and I have no malice toward them, I have to tell you this because it's for your own good." Hare Krishna. So, Kaikeyi fell in the trap and became an enemy of Ram and forced him into exile. They lived in Chitrakoot for some time, at the Kamagiri near the Mandakini Ganga. That's where they met Bharat and Kausalya and everyone, and begged Ram to come back, but he said, no, I must honor the word of my departed father. So from Chitrakoot, because so many people knew he was there, he entered into the Dandakaranya forest. He met the Rakshasa Virata and dispatched him from his earthly body. And they eventually came to the ashram of Agastya Muni. Now Agastya Muni is a very ancient sage. And when they approached that ashram, Ram was glorifying Agastya Muni, telling amazing stories to Ram, to Lakshman and Sita about his yogic powers and about his tremendous character. Even though Ram, Sita and Lakshman are the supreme absolute truth, his original expansion and his pleasure potency, in this world they honored and respected and served their devotees almost like ordinary people. In Chitrakoot, Sita studied under Atri Muni's wife, Anasuya, the subject of how to be a chaste wife. Anasuya said, you're the supreme goddess of fortune. What can I teach you? But because I'm your servant and you want me to teach you, I will teach you. And Sita was serving her and learning from her and asking her so many questions. So when they came to Agastya Muni's ashram, they served the sage with great respect. They touched his feet. And Agastya Muni gave Ram some special arrows and bows. He gave him a particular bow that was originally given, I believe, by Lord Brahma to Lord Indra to fight the asuras. But it wasn't used. So Indra gave it to Agastya Muni. And he said to Ram, keep this bow. And at the right time, I will tell you how to use it. Ram asked, where do you think the best place would be for us to live? Agastya Muni said, not far from here is Panchavati. That's the place you should stay. It was at Panchavati that Suparnaka was roaming around. Suparnaka is Ravana's little sister. Not little in size, but little in age compared to Ravana. And she became enamored by Ram and wanted to take Ram as her consort and roam through the forests and jungles and enjoy life with romantic affairs. But Ram said, I cannot go because I'm married to Sita. Better my little brother, Lakshman. His wife's not with him, so it's more appropriate. So she turned to Lakshman. And Lakshman said, but you are such a great personality. Why should you settle for second best? I'm only the menial servant of Ram. If you're with me, then you'll have to become a menial servant of Sita. Better you marry Ram. But Ram wouldn't do it because of Sita. So Suparnaka saw Sita as a threat to her sense gratification. So she leaped to Sita to kill her and to devour her. At that point, you know, Ram ceased his humorous dialogue and said, "Lakshman, do something." And Lakshman took an arrow and severed the nose from Suparnaka. Now Suparnaka is a lady, and she was extremely attached to her beautiful features. Beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. And if you really want to upset a woman, you cut off her pretty nose. So she was outraged. Ah, she ran to her brother Kara and Dushan, who were in the Danistan forest with 14,000 rakshasas, and said, "Go, attack them, kill them, look how he has disgraced me." And Karan Dushan went with 14,000 rakshasas. And as they were marching in, Ram told Lakshman that you take Sita and you protect her and I'll fight them alone. Now the name of the place, Panchavati, is today called Nasik. Nasik means literally the place where the nose was cut off. Now there's these five trees, banyan trees. Smarhari Prabhu, you seem to know about everything. Nobody has any doubt that it could possibly be your phone. Thank you. He's always been my well-wisher, protecting me in different ways. So there's a place called Sita Gufa, which is an underground cave where Lakshman hid Sita, and he stood outside the cave guarding, while Ram, in a matter of a couple hours, devastated all 14,000 rakshasas. Seeing that, Suparnaka ran back to Ravana and said, "Actually, Sita's so beautiful," and she described the beauty of Sita. "Why is she with this ordinary mortal man? Because I'm such a faithful, loving sister. I wanted to bring her back to you. That's all. That was my only motive, to bring this most beautiful woman in all Brahma's creation back to you to enjoy. And when I tried to serve you in this way, they cut my nose off." Sometimes facts can be slightly readjusted and have a very, very different meaning. Now Ravana, he was very, very angry that anybody could possibly defile his sister. But more than that, just by hearing about Sita, he became obsessed to own her and enjoy her. So he went and got Maricha, who was a powerful mystic yogi, who had been defeated by Ram twice before. And Ravana ordered him to take the form of a golden, beautiful, ornamented deer to attract Ram away from Sita. So they came to Panchavati, and Maricha was dancing around, very beautiful deer. And Sita said, "Oh, Ram, please get that deer for me. Capture him And when the exile is over, he could be our pet in our palace in Ayodhya. So Ram went to get him. Lakshman, he could see through it all. He said, "Don't go, Ram. This is Maricha. He's a mystic demon. He's a Rakshasa. He's just disguised himself. I know the 8,400,000 species of life, and this is not one of them." Not exactly that, but something like that. But Sita said, no, look at how pretty. His hooves are like emeralds, and his horns are like jewels. He's so beautiful, so cute, so sweet. He's a deer. You know, not too many people, deers may eat your crops, but not too many people are afraid of deers. Yes, because they're very innocent animals. So Ram went chasing, and Maricha lured him deeper and deeper and deeper away in the jungles. It is, the history of this story is symbolic. It's the way Maya works. Bhakti, Sita represents bhakti, or our devotion. Bhakti is meant to always be in union with Ram. Maya's mission is to take our loving sentiments away from Ram. Yes? Away from God. And how does she do that? How does Ravana do that? By alluring us with ornaments, with beauty, with the desire for wealth, with the desire for fame, with things that look very, very attractive. And sometimes those very, very attractive things are just Maya in disguise to take our heart away from God. But she presents herself so innocent. Not like a monster with big fangs and teeth, but as a very innocent looking, peaceful deer with lotus eyes and shining teeth and smiling, just looking so innocent, so nice, so beautiful. How could there be any harm in this? But beneath the disguise is a demon. So yes, we have to be very careful. Lakshman's the original guru. He knew exactly who is who, what is what. But if we don't take serious the word of the guru, then we can be allured by the temptations of Maya. And she'll appear as a friend. She'll appear so innocent and sweet. She'll appear so harmless. Srila Prabhupada would warn us sometimes, the problem with you Western devotees is you do not have enough fear of Maya. Now all you Indian devotees, you are all so Westernized that this instruction 100% applies to you also. We don't have enough fear of those golden deers with all nice ornamentations and smiles. We don't see what Maya's doing. So finally, when Ram went to shoot Maricha in the form of a deer because he realized who he really was, Maricha cried out exactly at Ram's voice, "Lakshman, Lakshman, help me, help me." And Sita said, Lakshman, go, go, go. And Lakshman said, that's Maricha. He's just pretending he's Ram. It's not. There's no danger. Nothing could cause any problem for Lord Ramchandra. But she says, no, no, my husband, he's in trouble. Why do you want to stay here alone with me? I know why. You've just been following us to the forest all this time, waiting for Ram to be away so that you can enjoy me. That was an arrow in Lakshman's heart. He would never even look above Sita's lotus feet. He was so faithful to Ram. So he said, all right, I'll go. But I'm afraid when I come back, you'll be gone. She said, if you don't go now, I will take my life, but I will not allow you to abuse me. Hare Krishna. So Lakshman ran toward Ram. And when he arrived, Ram said, why have you left Sita? He said, Ram. It's not easy performing devotional service. Sometimes in ISKCON we get apparent contradictory instructions from different authorities. Yes? We're not the only ones. Even Lakshman was getting contradictory instruction. So, and in the meanwhile, Ravana came, disguised as a sage. He was disguised as a sadhu, a holy man, because he knew that that's Sita's weakness. She loves to serve holy men. That's the way Maya tries to take our hearts away from Krishna, from Ram. For an ordinary person, they just, any type of gross sense gratification will keep them in Maya. But as you become more serious, being a devotee, then Maya will try to, she can't get you grossly. Very subtle way, she'll just see where is that weakness, where is the opportunity. She can take your greatest strengths and use them as weaknesses if you're not very careful. Sita's greatest strength is she loved to serve sadhus. So Ravana appeared as a sadhu and stole her away. And that's a long story. But we don't have much time. Ultimately, Ram and Lakshman made allies with Sugriva and Hanuman. Hanuman found Sita in the Ashok Grove in Ravana's kingdom of Sri Lanka. And there was going to be a war. Very interesting. On the shore, near Rameshwaram, Ram, with innumerable monkey soldiers, were assembled. And Ravana's spies were going there and coming back and telling Ravana. Ravana's younger brother, Vibhishan, was continuously pleading with his brother, please, Ravana, send Sita back. Even Ravana's own wife, Mandodari, was saying, I'm your primary queen, and you have so many others too. I'll satisfy you. Just send Sita back. Ravana wouldn't listen. He was infatuated. Don't we all have that experience? When we allow lust to come into our heart, it just covers our intelligence. Even if we know something is right, it's like the London fog. You've all seen London fog, since we're in London. You can't see what's around you. You can't see the reality. Lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, illusion, these six enemies, when we allow them to come into our hearts and into our minds, they create like a fog and steal away our intelligence. But Vibhishan especially, he was a great devotee. I'm going to go back many years. Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Suparnaka, and Vibhishan, the brothers and the sisters of Vishrava, who is the father. They all performed tapasya to Lord Brahma. Ravana asked for just benedictions of mystic powers and forces and intelligence and to conquer the world. Kumbhakarna was already so gigantic. When it came for Brahma to give him benedictions, they all did tapasya for tens and thousands of years. The demigod said to Brahma, "If he's already, without any benedictions, he can practically devour the universe. If you give him any benedictions, everything's finished." So they tricked Vibhishan. Brahma said, "What benediction do you want?" And at that point, goddess Saraswati jumped on Vibhishan's tongue and moved it in such a way to say, "I want to go to sleep." And Brahma said, "So be it," and left. And Vibhishan, "I just did tens and thousands of years of austerity to ask, and that's what I asked for." And then he went to sleep. But when Brahma asked Vibhishan what benediction, he said, "I only want unmotivated, unconditional, loving service to the Supreme Lord. That's the only benediction. And let me be an instrument of piety and high morality and good character for the pleasure of the Lord." So he was a great devotee. Even though he was such a great devotee, he loved Ravana because Ravana was his brother. He saw that Ravana was a very diseased person mentally. But still, he had compassion for him. And he was continuously telling Ravana, "Please send Sita back. Otherwise, you and everyone else in your dynasty is going to be destroyed. You cannot stand before Ram. You're doing something very immoral. Don't do it." And Ravana would become outraged with anger. "How dare you defy your king? You are nothing but a coward. You don't know my strength, my might. By saying anyone can defeat me, you are blaspheming me. You are insulting me. You deserve to be punished." But Vibhishan kept giving proper instructions. And he would send his wife to actually give solace to Sita while she was under apprehension. At one point, Ravana was so angry with Vibhishan for giving him good advice that he was just in front of everybody blasting against Vibhishan. And people like, at one time, Ravana was asking his head people, his sons, his soldiers, his generals, "What should we do?" And they were all just puffing him up like anything. "We have nothing to fear." Indrajit, his eldest son, he said, "What a nonsense. Ram, Lakshman, the monkeys. Sita's yours, father. Sita's yours. Don't worry. I will single-handedly destroy Ram, Lakshman, and the entire monkey army. You have no fear." And all the generals stood up and said the same thing. And then the Vibhisha, he got up and said, all these people who are in the name of your family and your allies and your generals, they are your worst enemies, Ravana, because they are leading you on the path of death. Indrajit is just an impudent, childish fool. You don't say that to Indrajit. He was very powerful. He defeated Indra. But Vibhishan was just putting everyone in their place. And hearing this, Ravana was outraged. And just launched into a barrage of insults to Vibhishan. Now please, put yourself in Vibhishan's place. Have you ever been chastised harshly by someone? How would you like to be chastised by Ravana at his peak of power and strength? He threatened to kill Vibhishan. He said, if you were not my own brother, I would kill you right now on the spot. You are a coward. You are a traitor. You are defying me. At that point, Vibhishan understood there's nothing I could do to save my brother. And he said, Ravana, you are on the path to death, and I'm not going to be a part of it. I resign. And Vibhishan left Ravana with his chief ministers, and he was a Rakshasa. He had a huge body, and he could fly. So he flew with his ministers across the ocean to the camp where Rama and the monkeys were all, you know, waiting for the war to begin and trying to think of how they're going to get across to fight it. And Vibhishan appeared in the sky like a mountain. Should I continue or is it late? Okay, I'll continue. Thank you. I was hoping you'd say that. Sugriva, who was the general of Ram's army, he saw Vibhishan there. And he understood he's the brother of Ravana. And with his ministers, they were really afraid. They wanted to just kill him. But Vibhishan said, I want to meet with Ram. I want to surrender my life to Ram. He was very honest. He said, I am Ravana's younger brother, and I tried everything I could to talk sense to him, to return Sita and surrender to Ram, but he would not listen, and now I have come to surrender my own heart and my own life to Lord Ramchandra. And those monkeys had 0% of trust in him. They went to Lord Ramchandra and Sugriva said, we should just capture him now and kill him immediately. He's Ravana's brother. How can we trust him? Blood is very thick. Even if he does have some intention, because he's angry with his brother, to join us, when it really comes down to the fight, he's going to take sides with his brother. And if we allow him in our army from within, he could serve as a spy. He could destroy us from within. We should just capture him and kill him. Although Ram's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he taught how management should be done. He said, I want to hear the counsel of all my leaders. Everyone speak and tell me what you think. And each and every one of the monkey generals was presenting, we shouldn't trust this man. Even if he surrenders to you now, he may have good intentions now, but you can never trust a Rakshasa. They have their Swadharma, they have their Swarup Lakshana, they have their own very deeply rooted tendencies. And they have to come out in due course of time. This man is a Rakshasa. This man is Ravana's little brother. No, we should not trust him. Some were saying kill him. Some were saying send him back. Some were saying reject him. Jambavan said, we have to be very, very cautious with this man. Lord Ram turned to Hanuman, said, what is your opinion, Hanuman? Hanuman said, in looking at his face, I see a very gentle and sincere person. And hearing the quality of his words, I hear someone who's very genuine. If someone is crooked with ulterior motives, we'll be able to sense somewhere in his expression or in his words. But I believe that Vibhishan is sincerely coming to surrender his life to you. We should wholeheartedly accept him as one of our own family members and embrace him. Ram said, yes, I agree with Hanuman. Bring Vibhishan. Sugriva got really disturbed by that. Because he's the general. He said, how could you trust the Rakshasa? We cannot accept him. Ram, please. I know you're merciful and everything, but this we have to be practical. This is war. He's dangerous. He's huge. He's powerful. He should be killed. Then Ram spoke immortal words. He said, everyone, please listen very carefully to what I am going to say. If anyone, whatever they have done, whoever they are, if anyone comes before me with a sincere and genuine heart and says, my Lord, I am yours, then I must accept that person as my own. And listen carefully. Even if today Ravana comes before me and sincerely says, I am yours, I vow, whether it's Ravana or anyone else, I vow to protect that devotee of mine and accept him as my own. Sugriva started crying and said, Ram, you are all merciful. Yes, let us welcome Vibhishan as our own. Vibhishan was so instrumental in every way because he knew the insides of everything of Ravana and all of Ravana's army and all of his strategies. And he was constantly telling Ram what to do in different situations. How to cross the ocean. It's 800 miles of water. And you have to bring all these armies across it. Vibhishan advised Ram should sit before the ocean and do some meditation and tapasya to get the blessings of Varuna. And Ravana did that. Ramchandra, he accepted Vibhishan's advice. He sat in the ocean, on the shore, but the ocean didn't pay attention. So Ram got angry and glanced on the ocean. But when the Lord is angry, it's like, when we get angry, our eyes get a little red, and it kind of burns people. Well, when Ram gets angry, he glanced at the ocean. The entire ocean started boiling. And all the fish, including Tim and Gillifish, were like jumping in the air, screaming in pain, and then landing in the boiling salt water again. And finally, the deity of the ocean appeared with folded palms, begged forgiveness, and told him that I will give you passage, make a bridge of stones, and I will allow all those stones to float on my surface. It was 100 miles wide and 800 miles long, that bridge of stones. And there are so many nice stories of how it was built. And they marched across, and the battle began. Actually, to go back a little, when Vibhishan came before Ram and surrendered, Ram embraced him with love, and everyone around was cheering. And then Ram said, I will personally coronate you as the king of Lanka. And with seawater, he poured it on Vibhishan's head and made him the king of Lanka. If you go to Rameshwaram, that place is still there. It's a beautiful little island just off the coast where Ram coronated Vibhishan. Then came the great battle. It lasted many days. The culmination. One little anecdote. Ravana sent some people to wake up Kumbhakarna. Now that's not easy. He was so huge that to wake him up, they had gigantic gongs and gigantic drums that they put right next to his ears, and they were beating and beating and beating. And he was... because he really ate a lot. And he slept really sound. So they had elephants running up and down his chest. They had chariots running up and down his chest. They were beating his limbs with gigantic weapons with like nails and... And at the same time, they were blowing horns and conch shells and beating massive drums right in his ears. Finally, he woke up. And they had like tons of buckets of blood, you know, just to refresh himself when he woke up. And they went before Ravan. Ravana said, you know, I want you to destroy Ravan and Lakshman, because they're causing havoc to our armies. And Kumbhakarna told him. Even he said, you should return Sita. It's not worth all this fighting just for one woman. But still, I will go out and kill Ram. So when he came to the battlefield, he was so huge. Literally, it was like a gigantic mountain walking. And even Ram, like, and all the monkeys were like, they were looking at this monstrous, gigantic Rakshasa just walking with such arrogance. And they all, you know, many of the monkey soldiers started running away just by seeing him. And Ram turned to Vibhishan and said, who is that? And Vibhishan said, that is my brother. His name is Kumbhakarna. And he told the whole history of Kumbhakarna and all of his frailties and all of his strengths. Eventually, Ravana was face to face with Lakshman and Vibhishan. And this was a very, very historical moment. Ravana was face to face with Vibhishan on the battlefield. And can you imagine how angry and envious Ravana was that his brother was a traitor and was fighting for his enemy? and he took one of his most powerful javelins and threw it at Vibhishan. Well, actually, he was about to. He was about to throw it at Vibhishan, but Lakshman came between them and pushed Vibhishan away to fight with Ravana directly. So Ravana let loose of that javelin that was meant to kill Vibhishan. He threw it at Lakshman. It was an astra that had been given to him, and it was blessed with the potencies of various demigods. And that javelin penetrated right into Lakshman's chest, went right through and into the ground, and Lakshman lay there unconscious. It's interesting. Lakshman took that blow to defend Vibhishan, Ravana's brother. Because even though he was a Rakshasa, he said to Ram, "I am yours," with a sincere heart. When Ram saw this, you know, Ravana was at his height of power and strength. Ravana was so angry. He ran to Lakshman and pulled the lance out of his chest. And Lakshman was laying there unconscious, and then Ram just took thousands of arrows and started covering Ravana's body so ferociously that Ravana had to retreat. And Ram picked up Lakshman's body. He was crying. He said, There's no value of getting Sita back if you're not there with me. If you die, I can't live." At that time he called Shushena, who was the medical physician, the chief medical officer for the Vanaras, or for the monkey army. And he said, "The only thing that can save Lakshman is a series of herbs, especially Sanjeevani. But it's only found on a particular mountain in the Himalayas." So Ram told Hanuman, "Go immediately and get those herbs." The son of Vayu, Sri Hanumanji, he took one leap and flew through the sky, and very quickly went from practically close to the southernmost part of India. He went all the way to the northern peaks of the Himalayas. And he found that one mountain, but he couldn't find the herbs. But there was no time to waste, so he lifted the entire mountain and jumped back with the mountain and set it down. Sri Hanumanji Ki Jai. This is his devotion. Please understand, it's not just because he was muscular. He was empowered by his love. He had so much love for Ram that there was nothing impossible. There was nothing he wouldn't do. There was nothing he couldn't do. He was empowered by his love. He didn't think what is possible, what is impossible. Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to rescue all of us from Maya. And in his enthusiasm, he would tell us, "Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary." You've all heard that before? And he performed miracles, unbelievable miracles. Someone asked Prabhupada, "Can you show me a miracle?" Prabhupada said, "I have made hippies into happies." That's a miracle. He was empowered by compassion, empowered by love. So Hanumanji, nothing was impossible, because his enthusiasm to serve Ram, just attracted Ram to empower him to do anything. Shusheshana got the herbs, and Lakshman smelled them and came back to life. At that point, Ram was really upset with Ravana. Now I'm going to finish the work. And he was standing on his feet as Ravana was charging with a majestic royal chariot. At that time, the demigods approached Lord Ram and said, "It's not fair. He has all these horses and a big chariot, and you're just standing on the ground. Please accept Indra's chariot and Indra's charioteer, Matali, and fight with that. Then it will be a more even fight." And Lord Ramchandra was always eager to accept the help of his devotees. He humbly accepted it. And Matali, the chariot driver, with a chariot with many, many horses. And Ram ordered Matali, go to Ravana, let us fight. But then after he ordered him, Ram became very humble and apologized. He begged forgiveness from Matali, the chariot driver. He said, "You are so exalted, you are Indra's chariot driver. I shouldn't have instructed you. I shouldn't have ordered you. Please forgive me." That was Ram. And Matali said, "I am your obedient servant. Just order me in any way." And they began the fight. And the fight lasted a long time. Ravana was shooting so many arrows, and Ram was shooting so many arrows that sometimes they couldn't even see each other. It was such a fight that all the Rakshasa army and all the monkey army, they all stopped fighting. They all sat down and watched. It was like the match of matches. No one had ever seen any two people fighting with such skill and such power and such grace. At one point, Ravana, then they were using mystical weapons. He pulled one arrow from his bow and chanted a mantra, and millions of venomous snakes flew out of that arrow with their mouths open and their fangs shining in the sun, and full speed, millions of them just charging toward Ram. Everyone was watching this. It was suspenseful. And then Ram took an arrow and chanted a mantra. He chanted a mantra to Garuda. And all of a sudden, millions of eagles, Garuda's army, millions of eagles came out of his arrow, and they devoured all the snakes that were flying in the air. So it was really a battle. Hours after hours after hours. And the demigods were praying to Ram, "Please kill him. Stop playing with this demon. Kill him." Sometimes Ravana had one head. That's usually the way he appeared, with one head, because he had mystic powers. He could change his form any way he wanted. I guess one head was more presentable. But at other times, he manifested all 10 of his heads. Dasabuka, that was his name when he was born. Ten-headed. Ravana came later because he brought so many people sorrow and made everyone cry. He was named Ravana. So they were fighting. And Ram, he took special arrows with his special bow and cut off the head of Ravana. The head fell to the ground. Then Ram cut off all 10 of his heads. They all fell to the ground. And all the monkeys were going, "Shri Ram ki jai!" And then from the necks, you, 10 heads grew back. He cut off 10 more heads. They grew back. This is like lust. Lust, the demon of lust is like this. Ravana very much represents lust. Out of lust for Sita, out of lust to enjoy what is the property of God, he did such heinous things. And sometimes, you know, we think we've conquered lust. You know, we chant some extra rounds, or we do some tapasya, or we fast. We get tempted for something, and we pass the test, and we think, I'm liberated. You? It's back. You know, through our bhakti, through our tapasya, through our own efforts, we somehow or other resist and we think, I have conquered. You? Very difficult. Vishwamitra Muni, he did thousands of years of severe tapasya. And he thought he conquered lust. But then along came Menaka. You? Ram cut off 100 heads of Ravana, and they were all falling to the ground. I mean, you could imagine the scene. There's like 100 heads laying on the ground, and he still has 10 heads. And even Ravana, even Ram was becoming, you know, how to kill someone like this? He doesn't die. He turned to Vibhishan. And Vibhishan explained to him. He said, he has received a benediction. However time you cut off his arms or his heads, they will grow back. The only possible way of killing Ravana is he has been given by the blessing of immortality within his heart. Not exactly immortality, but he had a nectar in his heart that made him indestructible and unkillable. He said, if you dry that out of his heart, then he will die. You have to shoot for his heart. At that time, Agastya Muni, he appeared before Ram. He also came from the Panchavati area. He was watching the fight. And he said, do you remember? I gave you a particular arrow. Use that arrow now. And chant this mantra. It's the Aditya Hridaya mantra. It's a mantra to get the empowerment of Narayan in the form of the sun. Every day we chant Gayatri mantra 3 times. At least we're supposed to. But the sun is the source of all life within this universe. You know, why is it that the Native American Indians worship the sun? So many people, they worship the sun. Karna was a worshiper of the sun. Because from a material perspective, the sun is the source of all life. All vegetation of food, it's only by the grace of the sun. All water, it's only by the grace of the sun. Yes. Rain is because the sun evaporates water, makes clouds, and makes it pour down on the ground to make our food grow, to fill the rivers, to fill the reservoirs. All our drinking, all our eating is due to the sun. We would freeze to death in a moment without the sun. We couldn't see without the sun. And all sources of heat and all sources of light within this entire creation are all indirectly the energy of the sun. The sun goes into trees. What is it called? Photosynthesis or something? And it goes into the trees, and the fire element is absorbed within the trees. And it gives us heat, gives us light. When those trees fall to the ground, after many, many, many years, it goes underground, those trees, and it becomes coal. You light up coal. Why does coal give heat and light? Because of the sun element that's stored within it, the energy of the sun. And long after that, when the coal is on, it turns to oil. We're drilling oil deep down from the earth. And what is it that gives the heat, the light, the electricity, the power to motorize our cars? It's all the energy of the sun that has remained dormant in that article for millions and millions and millions of years. Power of the sun. And Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the presiding deity who is empowering and giving light to all of us in life through the sun. So the Aditya Hridaya, Agastya Muni, was a mantra to the Lord of the universe, who is energizing, giving life, giving protection to all living beings through the sun. Ram chanted that mantra, and he took that arrow, that special arrow given by Agastya Muni. And this is very special, because in Ram's fighting against Ravana, he wanted to show the world that if you want to kill the demon within your own heart, whoever you are, you have to humble yourself to receive the blessings and the grace of great souls. It is the weapon of the blessings of the great souls alone that can empower us to overcome the enemy within and without. Ram took that arrow and he pulled it back. The feathers of that arrow were given by Garuda. Vayu, Surya, Agni, they all were present, empowering different aspects of that arrow. When Sri Ramchandra pulled it back to his ear on his bowstring, the arrow itself was emitting spectacular light, blinding light. The demigods were stunned. All the monkey soldiers just stood there watching with their mouths open. The rakshasas were blinded. He released that arrow. It glided through the sky, illuminating all directions. The earth was shuddering. Everyone, in absolute silence, watched as it soared through the airways, right into the chest of Ravana, where it pierced into the core of his heart, dried up that nectar he had stored in it. Ravana, all his 10 heads simultaneously, vomited blood. His eyes rolled in his head. He fell from his chariot to the ground like a mountain being cut by Indra. Ravana was dead. Shri Ram Vijayotsav ki. All the Rakshasas were screaming in horror. It was unbelievable. Nobody could conceive that their leader, the powerful Ravana, could possibly be defeated. They all ran away. And all the monkeys headed by Sugriva and Angada and Jambavan and Hanuman, they were like, Shri Ram ki jai! And as they were just praising Ram, they were chasing after the Rakshasas and beating them and throwing rocks at them and knocking them with clubs and biting them and scratching them. And the Rakshasas were just screaming, running away. The war was over. Mandodari, Ravana's wife, and his other wives too, they came out and they were weeping and crying, and Mandodari was chastising her husband's corpse. Why didn't you listen to us? Don't you know that whoever you are, however powerful you are, however wealthy you are, however knowledgeable you are, if you offend a chaste woman, you have to be destroyed. Why didn't you give back Sita? Why did you keep that rope, that noose of death kept around your neck? And now we are widows with no protection. And the whole city of Lanka is destroyed, and your whole dynasty is destroyed because of your lust for this woman. She was weeping and crying and beating her chest. And Ram turned to Vibhishan. He said, Vibhishan, perform the last rites for your brother to elevate him, liberate his soul. Vibhishan was crying. He was crying because he loved Ravana. He fell on the ground, weeping. But he had to be honest. He said to Ram, I cannot do the last rites for him. He was evil. He was envious. Although I was his well-wisher his whole life, he rejected me. He wanted to kill me. He was absolutely offensive and blasphemous to you. He stole Sita? No, not possible. I cannot perform the last rites. To perform the last rites to him is a form of worshiping him. I cannot do it. Ram was very sympathetic. He told Vibhishan, yes, he was cruel and he was envious. But now all of his cruelty and envy is gone. All that stuff is gone. Now, he's just a soul. And he's your brother. You must forgive him for all of his offenses. Because he can't do anything else. And you must elevate him. You must honor him, forgive him, respect him, and perform the last rites. It is your duty, and it is my will. When a person gives up his sinful activities, there's nothing to be held against him. Vibhishan performed the last rites for Ravana. Burned his body on a pyre of fire. Then Vibhishan and Ram, they told Hanuman, go inform Sita that Ravana is dead. Hanuman went to the Akshokvan. Should I continue? He informed Sita. Meanwhile, she was still surrounded by all these Rakshashis who were harassing her for the whole year. They were really mean, cruel women who were blaspheming Ram, blaspheming her, threatening to kill her, emotionally abusing her like anything. Constantly threats that if you don't surrender to Ravana and be enjoyed by him, we are going to kill you, we are going to eat you. Day and night, they were just cruel to her. Hanuman went to Sita and said, Sita, please give me permission to destroy all these Rakshasi women that harassed you so much. Sita said, no, don't harm them. They don't deserve to be harmed. Hanuman said, well, all they've done to abuse you, to cause you pain. They do deserve to die. Sita told a story. Would you like to hear the story? There was a hunter who was in the forest killing animals. Suddenly, a tiger attacked that hunter. And the hunter, helpless, he ran away from the tiger and climbed up a tree. And the tiger was in the bottom of the tree. And on that tree, in a branch, a bear was sleeping. So the tiger called up to the bear and said, this hunter is a common enemy for both of us. Push him down for the tree for I can eat him. The bear said, even though he's a common enemy, this tree is my home, and he's come as a guest in my home, so I have to protect him. So then the bear fell asleep. And the tiger said to the hunter, I'm hungry. The bear is sleeping. Push him down, and I'll eat the bear, and I won't harm you if you push that bear down. Let me eat him. So you know what the hunter did? He snuck up to the bear while he was sleeping and pushed him. And the bear fell. But as he was falling, he grabbed onto another branch. And then the tiger said to the bear that hunter betrayed you. Now push him down so I can eat him. Why are you defending him? He's a rascal. The bear said, because he attacked me personally, the nature of a saintly person is a saintly person does not seek revenge from anyone who personally attacks them. A saintly person sees it as for his own purification, or due to his past sins, or the grace of God to grow. But a saintly person, the ornament of a saintly person, the bear said, the ornament that makes him beautiful is he does not seek revenge for injustices to himself, but conquers the Lord by his quality of forgiveness. No, I will not throw him down. Sita told this story. She said, all these women, they're all nice people. They're actually very nice. They were just following Ravana. So I seek no revenge from them. So Hanumanji took the message back and went, told Ram that Sita said to Hanuman, the only benediction I want is that I could see my beloved Ram again. I don't care about anything else. No revenge. I just want to see Ram again. I'm longing for that moment. Ram sent Vibhishan to bring Sita. Vibhishan went to the Ashokvan and told Sita that I will arrange for you to take bath and wear beautiful clothing and I'll put you on a palanquin and personally take you back to Sri Ram. And that was done. And there was the reunion of Ram and Sita on this holy day of Dasara. The day that commemorates or that celebrates truth over illusion, light over darkness, good over evil. Krishna over Maya. Krishna Suryam Sam Mayaya Andhakar. Lord Chaitanya taught, Maya is like darkness, Krishna is like the sun. In the presence of Krishna, darkness is dispelled. Lord Ramchandra, with that flaming arrow, he penetrated the heart of the demon Ravana and liberated him and brought Sita back to him. Krishna used his Sudarshan Chakra. In Vrindavan, he didn't even use weapons. To Agasura, he just grew. To Putana, he just drank her milk. To Trinavarta, he just got heavy. To Sakatasura, he just touched him with his lotus foot. To Keshi, he just put his hand in his mouth. It's amazing. Krishna used no weapons in Vrindavan. He just did beautiful things. To Aristasura, he just threw him. But the Lord used many weapons to kill the demons in previous incarnations. Varahadev used his tusk and his hooves. Narasimhadev, his nails. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they have given us the supreme of all weapons, the holy name. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The holy name does not kill the demon. It kills the demoniac tendency in the heart of the demon. And awakens the pure love, the pure compassion of the soul. And the Lord has given us that weapon. It's the prime benediction for all humanity. It's ours. But how much do we value it? How much are we taking shelter of it? All the power of God is within His name. To kill the demons within. Lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, and illusion. To kill the Ravanas and the Kumbhakarnas within our own heart. Real victory in the age of Kali is to cry out sincerely, according to the instructions of the great spiritual masters, we chant the holy names. Take it seriously, all of us. And we could rescue Sita or Bhakti from our hearts, who is now under the captivity of Ravana or illusion. Chant Hare Krishna. Be happy. Bhakti Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai. Ananti Goti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai. Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.